Hi there, Year 11s. It's me, Mr. Shirley, again, back again with another episode of Literature Revision while Mr. Shirley does his chores. Today I will be talking about nobility in Macbeth as I put my groceries away. So, nobility. What do we mean by that? So, first off, we can talk about nobility as being a part of your class, being a high-ranking individual, and in Macbeth, there's a lot of noble characters, because all
dramas, especially tragedies, are about noble, high-standing characters. That's what makes them so tragic, when the noble, high-standing character meets his tragedy. And when noble characters, people of high rankings... Oh, dropped my change. When people of high ranking fall and have a tragic fall, the tragedy is how the aftermath affects everyone. For example, when Duncan dies, the most noble character in all of Macbeth, the entire nation of Scotland and all of its order sort of crumbles around his death. That's what we mean by tragedy, and that's part of the definition of nobility. Tragedy happens to the noble. However, going along with that, excuse me, I just got a tickle in my throat. However, the noble would also be have some sort of characteristics in terms of their morality, their intellect, things like that, that would be a part of them being noble. Being a high rank would automatically associate you with being a more intelligent, wise, and moral person. Obviously, we could talk a lot about Macbeth and how Macbeth is a noble person because he is a thane, just like Macduff. So we can say that Macbeth starts off as a noble character who falls because of his tamarsha, his tragic flaw. But the other most notable characters that we can talk about as being the nobles in Macbeth are Malcolm, Macduff, and Duncan. So part of the tragedy of Macbeth is the fact that a noble, high-ranking person such as Macbeth suffers because of his own flaws. Despite being noble, he is tempted by the witches. That's his biggest flaw in the play. And we all know what happens because of that. He causes himself and his wife to go completely insane. Because even though he's noble, he gives in to people's suggestions, like the witches and his wives, too easily. And he pays for that by the end of the play, with Banquo's ghost haunting him, and things like that. Also, the witches being able to trick him by saying, beware Macduff, him thinking he can actually take care of Macduff, and them telling him to be wary of when the woods come to Dunsinane, which, obviously, if anyone told you the woods we were going to move, you would think are impossible. It just shows you Macbeth isn't perceptive enough to look past the appearances. That's one of his biggest flaws. He takes things at face value and is easily convinced. And because of that, the tragedy of his own sanity and ultimately his entire life is a result of that. However, a lot of people are overlooking the other noble characters in the play, like Banquo, Duncan, Macduff, and who was the other one? Malcolm. That was it. So if we think of those three together, Duncan, Malcolm, and Macduff. Duncan is obviously the king. Malcolm is his son, who in Act 1 is said to become the next rightful king. And Macduff is another thane in Scotland. He is the thane of Fife. Now, they're all noble characters because in the play, they actually kind of represent, if you remember from my last episode, they represent the entire order of the Great Chain of Being and the rightful way that Elizabethans would have thought the world ought to be and was structured by God. If you don't know what that is, you could take a look at my other podcast about the Great Chain of Being. But it's basically the idea that everyone's position in life was ordained by God, and that to break that was obviously an act against God. So the way that Duncan, Malcolm, and Macduff kind of represent that order, that order of the world, can be seen in the fact that as soon as Duncan dies and Malcolm flees, and Macduff also flees, the entire world of Scotland is thrown into turmoil. They have a tyrant king, things start to go crazy where ghosts come out of the grave and things like that. But more significantly, it is only when Malcolm, the rightful king, returns at the end of the play, that the order of the world is restored. And if you take a look at Malcolm's final speech, he talks a lot about how they're going to adhere to the order of the world and make, put things back to how they ought to be, especially as they will act grace by grace. That means by the grace of God. And you can tell they're talking about God because they use the capital G when they're talking about grace, that they're going to act by grace. So they're going to restore the order of the world that God should have put into place. So obviously with the triumphant return of Malcolm and Macduff, you could talk about how Shakespeare is kind of presenting a message about the importance of order, especially societal order. However, at the same time, you could kind of look at the idea that Shakespeare is also critiquing humans' ability to order. Because, first of all, all of these characters, Duncan, Malcolm, and Macduff, have their own flaws. Duncan, in Act 1, after granting Macbeth the Thane of Cawdor and praising him and being invited over to his house, notes how he says to Lady Macbeth, who right before this we saw was plotting to kill Duncan. He calls her his honored hostess. He calls her noble, which is very ironic and make the audience think that Duncan's a bit naive. He's maybe even a bit too trustworthy. And that's Duncan's tragic flaw, which causes himself to be put in the position where he is murdered. And so we can see that Shakespeare is critiquing him in a way that his naivety plays a role in the tragedy of Macbeth. He's not completely innocent in this. However, there's more than him to blame. Malcolm, who was the rightful king, as I've said a couple times now, why didn't he just become the king when Duncan was killed? That would make sense, wouldn't it? Well, it would, except for the fact that Malcolm fled immediately. And in Act 4, Malcolm actually says something about his only fault being that he spoke falsely when he said he would serve his country. That's in Act 4, Scene 3, when he's talking to Macduff. He says his only fault is that he spoke falsely when saying that he would act for his country. That's not a direct quote, but that's from Act 4, Scene 3. Remember, you don't need to paraphrase an entire speech. That alone, ooh, my voice cracked. That alone would be a good enough reference. So by Act 4, Malcolm has acknowledged his own fault. Now, what about Macduff? What is Macduff's fault? He seems a pretty cool guy. He fights for Scotland. He comes back to kill Macbeth for his country and not just for revenge, which would have been seen as sinful. Well, Macduff got the opportunity for revenge because of his fault of loving his country too much. And by loving his country too much, he left his entire family in jeopardy back in Scotland to be killed by Macbeth. So on the one hand, like we talked about at the start, you definitely can look at this play as sending the message about the importance of order. But secondly, there's those criticisms of order, because the three figures that do represent human order, Malcolm, Macduff, and Duncan, all have their faults that play a role in the tragedy of Macbeth and cause the chaos that follows Macbeth's actions. You could maybe extend this point a little bit further and think about maybe Macbeth is making a statement about all humans, that ultimately all humans are flawed, and that the ultimate force in the world is something much larger, like fate or God, which, if you think about it, is part of the message of the play as well, that Macbeth can't escape his fate, he can't overreach his bounds, just like in Act 4 when he tries to question the witches for more information, only to become tricked. So Shakespeare could be sending that message about humans having their own place in the world, and that there's certain things like fate and the gods and the way they interact with human lives that humans can't access. The only other noble character that haven't talked about is Banquo. And Banquo's a tricky one, because he is a very loyal character. He hears the prophecies with Macbeth, and is immediately suspicious of the witches. He also, when hearing his prophecy for Fleance to become king, in Act 3, Scene 1, at the very start of this act, before Macbeth enters, he's seen talking about the possibility of his own fortune coming true now that he's seen what's happened for Macbeth. And he stops himself saying, "But hush no more," suggesting that he's not going to tempt fate. He's not going to try to push the limits. And he's not going to try to, you know, kill Macbeth, maybe, to put himself in a position of power by making Fleance king, however that would happen. And it's really interesting if you think about the fact that he restrains from sin. In Act 2, when, before the murder of Duncan, Banquo is walking around and he says that the heavens have put their candles out, it's very dark, and he says to himself that he needs to refrain from the cursed thoughts that the witches have put in his heads. He says, "Restrain from me the cursed thoughts that nature gives way to in repose." So we can kind of tell that he has been thinking about the prophecies a little bit, but he calls them cursed thoughts, and he wants to be restrained from them, which would be a noble thing, because he's obviously trying to restrain from the temptation towards, you know, sinful actions that Macbeth can't act against. Now, what happens to Banquo for all of his nobility? He ends up getting killed by his best friend. The worst of all sins, betrayal. That's a bit of a tricky pickle, because what do we say is Shakespeare's message? If you're going to say that humans are flawed ultimately, or that we need order, is there any message there as well about acting nobly? Because really, in what happens in Macbeth, Banquo, one of the most noble characters who never commits any wrongdoings, except maybe not being more suspicious of Macbeth, which you can't even see as a sin because it's actually a loyalty. Anyways, so the most loyal character and the most noble character dies innocently. This could be sending a message about, you know, maybe there is no order in the world, even into exact contrast of what we just talked about. And remember, in your exams, if you were able to talk about how Shakespeare is emphasizing some kind of message about the importance of order, that alternate point right there that Banquo presents, that no, at the same time, there is no order in this play because the most noble character dies, those kind of multiple-sided opinions and theories will really reward you well, especially people trying to get into those top bands. I don't really have anything else to talk about with nobility, and all my groceries have been put away. So, it's been nice chatting to you guys. I'm going to eat, I guess. Bye-bye.